copyright forum of Christian leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Going to look at persuasive communities. What does that mean? It's the whole idea of trying to reach out to the gospel with people in a way that people can see what we are, see what we're doing, and think, okay, maybe. The idea, part of it comes from King Agrippa, where he says, "Do you think that in such a short time you can persuade me to be a Christian?" The old King James Version says, "Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian." And we want to persuade people. I'm director of an organization called SOLAS, Center for Public Christianity, and we do not want to use the word apologetics. We try and say that it should be persuasive evangelism. So this is a look at how we might do it. The task is incredibly difficult. If you think about how can you persuade people, I mean, it's really, really worth doing this. Sometimes it's actually worth just going and interviewing people. People in your street, people in the street beside your church, people in your culture. Go to the restaurant down here and just talk to some of the staff and say, okay, you know, do you go to church? If you go to church, what do you think? If you don't go to church, why don't you go to church? What would make you go to church? And there's a huge amount of persuasion to be done, so much so that most people think, well, this is impossible. How can we persuade people to be Christians? I've often thought it's impossible. And I've been amazed at when people come to genuinely believe and people change. So I think there's an enormous task. I think particularly in Europe, there's a huge task because most of the people we're dealing with will be to some extent de-Christianized or of other faiths or even quite anti. So it's made even more difficult because we live in a culture where people generally don't like to talk about their faith or lack of faith. I said in one of the other groups that I explained to a group who were coming to do evangelism explosion that knocking on someone's door and saying, "I'd like to talk to you about God or your personal faith," is for many people in Europe a bit like someone knocking on your door and saying, "I'd like to talk to you about your sex life." Actually, some people would probably prefer that. They don't mind if your religion is private. They really don't. They just want to keep it. And as long as you keep it that way. And what they've done and what's happened in Europe is that Christianity and religion has been reduced to the level of a private club. My two favorite images of that are a Star Trek club or a knitting club. So people don't mind. I mean, I imagine if you spoke to a lot of the staff here, so there are 700 people here. It's no difference to them whether we were here at a Star Trek conference speaking Klingon. It doesn't, you know, what difference would that make to anyone? When you go to, I've spoken about coffee shop evangelism, you go and you sit in the coffee shop and you're talking about Christianity. People don't mind. It's the same as the local knitting group going and sitting in Starbucks and doing their knitting and drinking their lattes and cappuccino. People don't care. That's the kind of... So it's just an enormous task bridging that gap. However, I also think there is a tremendous opportunity because people are so ignorant and people don't know and because people are hungry and they are thirsty. They're looking for some way to assuage that spiritual thirst. We mentioned the book we've got about our cafe culture evangelism. We called it Quench. I don't think it was me that thought of it. But I actually love the name because Quench carries this double idea of you're drinking to quench your thirst, but people have a spiritual thirst. So I think that there is an opportunity. I've argued this, I've stated this, I can't really prove it, but I do believe that there are more opportunities just now than there have been for many, many times in many, many areas. I mean, I'm quite intrigued by being in Poland. I like any country I go to, I like to read a bit of its history and look where it's currently at and listen to some of the people. And already being here, even though I've hardly been able to get out, it's quite fascinating. The Catholic Church is a very, very stronghold here. And that makes it very difficult for evangelical churches in doing evangelism. Except now I hear that there's a political party that's specifically anti-Catholic. I hear that a lot of younger people are less inclined to be traditionally Catholic, are therefore more likely to become either anti-Christian or to be open to different expressions of Christianity. So I honestly believe that in every single country there are more opportunities. Here's the problem. How do we do that? How do we go from where the church is, where we are, to where people are or people are looking, and especially when you can't have a program? There isn't a formula that you can have. How is it possible to do that? Now, I use a basic mantra to people, which goes like this. You contact, you connect, you communicate. You have to make contact with people, you have to connect with people at some level, and then you've got to communicate with them. And our argument would be this, or my argument would be this, that going hiring a big stadium in Warsaw or in Amsterdam or in Prague and calling in a big name evangelist, getting a really good Christian praise band and so on, handing out loads of leaflets, why would anyone come? What would be the purpose for them coming? So we tell you a little bit about Solas. Solas was set up after I wrote the Dawkins letters. I think the book is here. And there was a man came into our church, and it's a bit like somebody said Eastern European time. Well, we operate, never mind Eastern European, in my church, we operate on Indian time. He came in at 10:45, and there was nobody there. Service starts at 11. People don't come until after that. So I recognized him. He's a famous politician. He had been the former leader of the Scottish National Party. He said, "Mr. Wilson, why are you here? I've read your book, David. Never got to any of the talks, so just thought we'd come along." Well, that was 2 years ago. He's been with us ever since. And his wife, they became members in the church. He speaks of his faith, and he came to see me one day and said, "David, I love the message of the church. It's cool. Absolutely love it. It's fantastic. It's more important than the political message that I've been putting forward all my life. But," he says, "you've got a great message and you're useless at putting it out." So he had a politician's way of trying to do things. For example, he said, "Why don't you issue press releases every week?" About what? The church. Church appoints new elders. Who's going to be interested in that? But we did start doing it. He started doing it for us. And I was amazed at how much the local newspaper picked up some of the things that we did. But one of the things he said was, "You can't go around yourself trying to convert everybody. What you've got to do is get groups of people who try and do the same sort of thing. And it should be within churches, but if churches don't do it, collecting between churches." And so we set up this thing called SOLAS, Centre for Public Christianity. SOLAS is a Gaelic word that means light. You can interpret it in lots of different ways. It is also, you see there the slogan. Also, you could argue the five solas of the Reformation if you want, or if you're Spanish, it's about sunshine. So we don't get too much of that in Scotland, so we thought it was just a great thing for us to have. And the idea is, the principle we operate on is, and I have to stop using this because it doesn't work when you're fundraising or so in the United States. I called it the Al-Qaeda principle, but that doesn't help too well. And it's the idea of cell groups. The reason Al-Qaeda were successful in what they did in their evil purpose was they had cell groups that even if you chopped off the head, that these cell groups would continue. One could go wrong and be caught and so on. And so we thought about having different cell groups and also different areas of interest. Now, I'll say more about these cell groups in a moment. But we took up these 10 areas that we thought were connectors between the gospel and society, the church, and so on. The first are called society, and what that meant, that's everything. That's the mercy ministries, that's caring for the poor, that's dealing with drug addiction, that's many, many of the social needs, the kind of Christians against poverty stuff, food banks. There's a tremendous need, and there's an apologetic, if you like, of that. People see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. So we need to think, a big part of what we're trying to do is to say to people, there isn't a program, but what you need to do is think about how you can do things. Second is science. There is a very, very common myth prevalent in Europe that, and also amongst educated people in the United States as well, and also uneducated people, that science and religion are opposed. That there's faith on the one hand and there's science, reason on the other. And it is incredibly important that we dispel that myth. People are not going to touch it. I knocked on a door once. I don't do a lot of door knocking, but the ones I did, I remembered. And I knocked on this door and it was great because I remember that particular street because the first door I knocked on, the woman came to the door and said, "We're not interested. We're Jehovah's Witnesses." And I went, "Revenge," and she slammed the door. So I went on to the next door, and a man came to the door, and I said, "Hi, I'm from the local church, and we're asking people about whether they go to church, and you know what they think about God, and so on. Do you mind having a chat?" "No, no," he says, "I'll get the wife." Because that's the standard reaction of a Scottish male. Religion is for women and children. It's not for men. And so I looked at him, and I said, "No, no, look, me man, beard, we talk." I was trying to use his language. And he says, no, I'm not interested. He said, "I believe in science." "Well, that's great. Are you a scientist?" "No." "You read science?" "No." "You studied science?" "No." "You did science at school?" "No." "You know anything about science?" "No." "So you believe in something you know nothing about?" "Yep, because science has disproved God." Well, I mean, I had to resist the temptation to absolutely rip him to shreds. But I mean, what a position. Now, that's an extreme position, but there are a huge amount of people who take some variation of that position. "I believe, I trust in science." Another way of putting it is this. They will say things like, "What has religion given us? Science has given us toasters and televisions." Okay, doesn't quite logically work like that. Science also gave us industrialized killing, the nuclear bomb, extra viruses, and so on. So the whole area of the interaction with science. Now, it's not just a scientific apologetic. It's trying to help people who are involved in science. And that's many, many different people. It's trying to help people to think about science. It varies at different scales. The debate, I don't know if you were any at the debate between Ard Louis and Stephen Meyer, that was just brilliant. Didn't understand half of it, but it was still brilliant. If I did understand it, I think it must be brilliant. That's the way sometimes these things work. And I thought, wow, that's just an incredible thing to have. So we're trying to encourage that. Cafe, that of course is the quench thing. It's a big thing about where people meet and trying to sit and talk with people. Music, it's another huge one. I did a seminar on that here. How do you encourage Christian musicians, musicians who are Christians, to think about their music and their work and their art, their creativity? And how do you use music in proclaiming the gospel? Art, exactly the same thing. Encouraging Christian artists, and how do you use art? Medicine, that's a phenomenal one. Again, I'm not sure what it's like in other countries, and in the discussion you can maybe tell me. In my city, in my country, the profession with the highest number of Christians is medicine, by a mile. It varies considerably, but something between 10 and 25% of doctors will be professing Christians. That's a very high percentage in the professions. And again, we think about not just medical ethics, but how doctors act as doctors and everything else that goes along with that. History. I love history, love the apologetic of history. Every single town, every single village, every single city in Europe has a history which involves Christianity. So that should give you an enormous doorway to trying to communicate the gospel. and to think about how you actually use history. Now, people say in our postmodern society, which is meant to be ahistorical, people don't like history, and yet history books are bestsellers. Something like Anthony Beaver's book on Stalingrad, for example, sold something like 2 million copies. And it's just a story of the Battle of Stalingrad, beautifully written and very, very well researched. But history is an open door. Media. Again, we're trying to encourage people, those who are involved in the media, and also how we can use the media. Philosophy. Everyone has a philosophy. When people say, oh, I don't have a philosophy, that itself is a philosophy. To get people to think about how they think and what they think is hugely important. I just got a tweet from a friend who said, you know, evangelism is more than discussing Kierkegaard over a latte. Well, I'd love to discuss Kierkegaard over a latte, but there's not many people do that. But people do discuss philosophy. I remember giving a talk one time on the four most famous Swedish philosophers. They are Annie, Benita, Bjorn, as Abba, in other words, Agnetha. And I looked at the philosophies in their songs. I gave a talk about Metallica once, and Metallica and Nietzsche and philosophy and so on. And there was a Greek guy present, and it was so funny. He wrote an article, which he sent to me, which he'd actually done, on the philosophy of Metallica. And there's an American writer who's actually written a book on Metallica, philosophy, and religion. It's actually brilliant. It's a really, really good book. So everything, you can bring philosophy in everything, and church. What we're trying to do there is to say that it's actually the churches that should be the persuasive communities, and we need to think about church and what we're doing with church and how it works. Too often we just don't think. We either go along with our tradition or we adopt the latest program that we hear that's working. But we need to actually sit down and think, what are we trying to do here? How is this biblical? How does this work? Could it be changed? Should it be changed? And try and work it through in the light of all those other things. When we do a cafe event, I always ask people to do this. First of all, pray. Prayer is really, really important. And you don't decide to do something and then do prayer backing. That's what an awful lot of people do. You pray and you try and get like-minded people together and pray that God will bless you in what you're seeking to do. You know that no one can convert. I remember doing some outreach amongst some Muslims, and the local imam asked me to a meeting with a white Muslim guy who was a white convert who was really angry, who accused us of being racist and Islamophobic because we were talking to Muslims about Jesus Christ. And we were trying to convert Muslims. And I said, well, you have to stop there. He said, what? I said, I believe in God. He said, uh-huh, and? I said, I believe in God, and I believe that I cannot convert anyone. I believe in the Holy Spirit. It's only God who can convert someone. And at that point, the imam interrupted and said, excuse me. He said, I have no problem with my friend here. He is right. Only God can convert. And that was absolutely brilliant. And we said, we pray. And that's true. You pray that God would convert people, because you can have a methodology for it. I mentioned in the Dawkins letters the name of a guy who was converted through the Richard Dawkins website. I've met someone else who was converted through reading Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion, which probably wasn't the intended effect. But he thought, this is so dreadful, that he went away and read the Bible and decided, I want to be a Christian. So, you know, sometimes it's just, it's very, who knows? So we pray. Pub. I didn't mean that as a drink. I meant a place where you go to drink. I meant publicity. You need really, really good pub. You're trying to connect with people. You need good publicity. I remember driving in the United States once, and it was somewhere way, way, way out west, and we were driving back east. And I kept reading this sign, like 500 miles to, I think it was Wall Village or something. It wasn't Walmart. Let's just call it Wall Village. I don't think it was that, but something like that. I saw the sign, never noticed, drive. 450 miles to Wall Village, 400 miles to Wall Village, 350 miles, 300, 290 miles, 280. You get the picture, all the way down. 10 miles to Wool Village, 9 miles, 8 miles, 7 miles, 6 miles, 4.5 miles, you know, 1 mile, you know, 3/4 mile, 1/2 mile, 200 yards. You know this, by the time we got to Wool Village, everyone, I mean, there's just one of these ridiculous highways that goes on forever. The vast majority of cars were turning in. You know, it's a very clever advertising strategy. I always thought, I wonder if I'd do that in the church. I don't know how to just put it. But you do need to have some kind of publicity. And you need good publicity when you're organizing events and when you're doing things. You also need, you are there to proclaim, you are there to tell people about Jesus Christ. You're there to talk about something that will provoke them to think, maybe discuss, maybe argue, maybe go, yeah, there's something here. And you, if you're going to do all of that, you need to prepare. I've gone and done cafe events or debates or different things, and if they've not been well prepared, it's a disaster. Our friends here have been volunteers at the ELF conference. They came in on Wednesday to prepare, and actually they were preparing long, long before that. Things don't just happen. And these kind of events and doing these kind of groups don't just happen. Now, I have this kind of strange idea. I don't know if this will work or not. So this is where your feedback comes in and where others might like to think about it. I would quite like there to be groups of people who share an interest in, who are Christians, and who share an interest in communicating the gospel in their area, meeting together once a month. Like we have a group in Edinburgh. They started meeting in a pub. They didn't organise events initially. They met and they would have a drink and they would talk about, someone would raise an issue and they would talk about that issue. And then they began organising events. They in particular in Edinburgh, they've organised debates. But I'm looking at in all the cities in Scotland, and I'd love to see in other cities in Europe, people just meeting together, taking once a month to meet with other Christians. They can be from their own church. It's better if you've got people from different backgrounds, and think, what are the issues that my friends are asking about? What are the issues? What would work? Could we do a music concert in a pub, you know, a jazz night? Would that be a good thing to kind of introduce people? Could we have a book talk? Could we have a debate? Could we have a philosophical talk? All these different kinds of things. And I love the idea of people thinking how to do a constructive, but an outgoing and a related evangelism. I would argue it's what churches should be doing, but most churches are not going to do that. And also the trouble with churches doing it is churches tend to operate on the principle of let's see who we can get in. I'm thinking this more about let's go out. Where can we do this? I don't know whether that would work in every context, but whenever I've looked historically at where there's been renewal and revival, it has occurred, yes, in the church, but it's also occurred with people who've gone out, people who've been thinking about issues, people even who've been discussing things. And I just wonder if it's worth you thinking about, well, I'm going to spend one night a month meeting with other Christians, praying, thinking about how we can reach the community that we're in, and let's see where it goes from there. I would suggest one of the things we've got Solace is we would like to help with that if we can. Our own experience of setting up Solace, and also I think that you would be able to help us. But we'll talk about that. I'm going to leave it there just now.